Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
And now, back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted the 2002 Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging around with me today on this great day in history of Thanksgiving Day, this unique American holiday. And I can't think of anybody I'd rather spend it with than the guy who's our guest this half hour. Kenneth Davis is with us. Kenneth's a new friend, and he's a New York Times best-selling author of Don't Know Much About History. And he was recently dubbed the King of Knowing by Amazon.com. And he often appears on national television and radio. He served as a commentator on NPR's All Things Considered. He has a USA Weekend column. Many of you have seen his books, Don't Know Much About Mythology, the Bible. I've got the mythology book and the history book here. We're going to work out of the history book today as we talk about some of the truth, some of the reality, and some of the mythology of Thanksgiving. Kenneth Davis, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Clear off your desks. Take out a pencil. This will be a pop quiz. Don't those words freeze your, you know, just make your blood turn cold.
Yeah. You just made everybody turn the dial there, Kenneth. Thanks a lot.
No, the point of my book is that we went through school and we either mislearned it or it was so tedious and boring that we never learned it in the first place. And this stuff is fun and interesting if you make it that way, but mostly because it's human. And if we talk about history in terms of real people doing real things, it becomes a lot more interesting and we have the connections to our own lives. And then it's all of a sudden it's fun to talk about it.
Well, absolutely. And, of course, I've been a student of history for, well, really all my life. I studied it a lot in college, but you know, Kenneth, I can't look at your books without singing that Sam Cooke song. I know that's the play on you, and I saw that you have almost as much gray hair as I do in your photographs. So I know you remember that old song. But folks, some of you may remember the old "Don't Know Much About History" song that Sam Cooke did, and I won't say how long ago it was. I'll just say it was not as long ago as the Pilgrims. And Kenneth, but it was a great song, and I love the way you played off of that, and don't try to tell me you didn't, because I know that you did.
Well, I grew up on Sam Cooke, and unfortunately, thank goodness you didn't mention the Herman's Hermits version. Then we would have been in trouble. But
yeah, I'm sorry to say I remember that one too. But at least you know that I'm a purist, Kenneth.
like the Puritans,
exactly,
which
exactly
segues us into this morning's topic.
And that may be the only connection I have to them, by the way. Kenneth, talk to us about what do we need to know about Thanksgiving.
Well, where do I begin? It's such a holiday layered in mythology and mistaken notions and pictures of people in black costumes, cardboard cutouts hanging in the supermarket window.
And that, the turkey. Don't forget the turkey.
And the turkey. Well, the fact is that to the pilgrims, first of all, a true day of Thanksgiving would have meant a day of prayer and fasting, not what most of us have in mind for the rest
of
the
afternoon.
Well, now,
wait a minute, Kenneth. You're taking all the fun out of this now.
Well, the true first Thanksgiving feast, which was celebrated, by the way, in October, not November of 1621, was really a harvest festival. The pilgrims wouldn't have called that Thanksgiving. They were very somber, serious people, and if they were having Thanksgiving, it meant about 3 or 4 hours in church and a sermon that was, you know, full of hellfire and your worthless sinners who are all going to, you know, die very soon. These weren't happy-go-lucky folks most
of
the time.
And they had a lot less to be happy about after about 10 months in the New World, didn't they?
Well, it is an extraordinary story. You know, of course, they arrive on the Mayflower in December of 1620, and a particularly bad time to arrive in Massachusetts and try and start a colony. Massachusetts in mid-December is cold and probably a couple of
brutal
feet of snow on the ground. It was brutal. So 50 of the 102, actually 103, one child was born on the way. 50 of the 103 people who arrived on the Mayflower died in the first year. So those on that first Thanksgiving, the 50 survivors were mostly thankful just to be alive.
Do you know if Peregrine survived? That's the child that was born in the Mayflower. Do you know if she survived?
Yes, she did. She grew to adulthood. And
I'm glad to know that.
Was married, and
she had a great name,
exactly
Peregrine.
Who she married, but yes, and that was. That was the beginning of many of the descendants of the Mayflower, who have some of whom have filled the White House.
Right, absolutely. Well, folks are visiting with Kenneth Davis. His books are called "Don't Know Much About History," "Don't Know Much About Mythology." I got to get the one "Don't Know Much About the Bible." Kenneth, I know that's another one. He sold something under 10 million copies across the world, and it's a best-selling. This one. These books are New York Times best-selling books, and so we're going to continue our visit with Kenneth as he continues to tell us about the richness and the mythology of Thanksgiving and how things really were back there 384 years ago. 20 till, I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with me. We'll be right back.
That's right. Do it no matter what the people say.
Back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Kenneth C. Davis, the author of "Don't Know Much About History." Kenneth, you got a website?
There is a website. It's called don'tknowmuch.com, all one word, no apostrophe, and it's really an informational website. I don't sell anything there. This is a great place for people to go and learn more about my books, especially kids. You know, I do books for adults and children. Right. The children's books are illustrated, fun ways to learn about things like the Pilgrims and the Presidents in the 50 states, and then my adult books cover a whole variety of series from American history to the Bible to the new one, which is about mythology. And I try and ask some questions, and sometimes they're a little bit offbeat and quirky. Sometimes just very straightforward, like what was the Mayflower Compact, and sometimes
right.
they're a little bit irreverent, like why is there a statue of Benedict Arnold the Boot?
And Kenneth, that's the main reason why you were invited to be on the show today, because if you had not been irreverent, we wouldn't have found you very interesting. So I'm glad you were. Speaking of the Mayflower Compact, now, one of the things that I remember in doing my research on Thanksgiving, not as much as you've done, but my own research, was that when they first landed on what is now Provincetown, at the tip of Cape Cod.
That's right.
They wandered onto the soil there and found. What I remember finding out was that they found a bunch of food.
They found a cache of corn.
Yeah.
And
they thought, wow, this is a great place.
there it was. It was the first contact of sorts with the Native Americans. They found a cache of corn that was had been stored away, and they helped themselves to it. I don't know if there's no record if they left an IOU, and that was the beginning of how the Native Americans who were living in Massachusetts helped the Pilgrims survive that first winter. And this was from the perspective of the Native Americans who lived there, here are these strangers who come ashore on this strange boat and then start stealing their food. How would you feel about that?
Wasn't the corn in a graveyard?
It was
a graveyard, and the indignant caretakers ran them off.
And then you can go up to Cape Cod today and out towards the tip of Provincetown, and there is a place called Indian Hill, and that is the spot where this all took place. And so you can go and see that. Now, of course, they didn't stay on Cape Cod. They didn't think it was suitable. They couldn't find enough fresh water, so they moved on and sailed a little further and found their way into Plymouth Bay, which is not far from Cape Cod.
But in the process of that, they created a very important document, didn't they?
They did, and there's a little story, a little history about that. We're talking about the Mayflower Compact, which is not a small car, nor is it a woman's makeup kit. It was the first written constitution, essentially, in American history. Now, the reason that they needed a constitution was, and this is one of the myths of the Mayflower, only half of the people who were on the Mayflower were actually pilgrims. The other half were people who were simply coming to make a fresh start in this new world. And as they approached the colony, as they approached land, it certainly seemed that half of the people who weren't pilgrims were going to go off on their own and do their own thing. And they all realized that this probably wouldn't be a wise approach, so they decided, how are we going to run things here? And they sat down and decided, we'll basically work on democracy. We'll take a vote. Of course, this was exclusive to adult white males, and probably would remain that way for nearly 300 years afterwards. But that was the first sort of baby steps toward democracy in America, and that's why it's an important document. And showed this English colonist predilection towards democracy. These were people who were leaving England because they didn't want to be ruled by a king who was also the head of the church, and that's an important thing to remember.
That's the name separatist.
That they were Puritans who wanted to purify the Church of England because it had broken away from Catholicism but hadn't gone far enough. They were separatists because they didn't like the Church of England and didn't think that didn't believe it was the right way to go about things. And they were literally kicked out of England at one point.
Turns out they were. If you think about it, they were kicked out of England. Then they went to Holland, and they were sort of kicked out of Holland, and then
They were welcomed in Holland, but they felt like strangers there, and their children were growing up learning Dutch instead of English. So that's why they decided that it would be better to make a completely fresh start, start a new Eden, more or less, in a completely new world. And
you get the feeling that this part of the Pilgrims, the latent separatists, you get the feeling that they might have been a little prickly, not really prone to having much humor in their life. What do you think?
Well, you know, one definition of Puritan is the person who has the sickening fear that somewhere somebody is having fun, and that was, you know, that was certainly part of their that was part of their constitution and part of their makeup. After all, these are the people who, about 50 years after they come to America and establish a colony and set up Boston, they banned Christmas. They weren't that festive, you know. So
that's happening in Massachusetts right now, isn't it?
Well, from a different perspective. We won't go there just now.
Things
we can talk about
things keep coming around and going around, don't they?
Yeah. No, they banned Christmas because they didn't think it was religious enough, not because it was, you know, too much religion. And you know, that's one of the points of underneath this. We talk about their coming for freedom of religion, and they did, but that meant the freedom of their religion, not anyone else's. After a while, the Puritans, for instance, banned Quakers in Massachusetts and actually hung some of them in Boston, and they didn't care for Baptists. So
I don't think we'd want the Puritans to move into our neighborhood, believe it or not. But thank goodness for them, because they were a very important part of the foundation of this great nation, the United States. When we come back, we're going to get Kenneth to tell us a little bit about what they might have eaten on that very first Thanksgiving Day. Ben Till, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back. It's 7:10. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you subscribe to my blog when you get there, and I hope you subscribe to my blog, too. The newsletter comes on Sunday by email. The blog comes Monday through Friday by real simple syndication. It's easy to do. We'll show you how to do all that when you get to the website. Just go to my website and click on the blog on the top left corner, or go directly to the blog by going to jimsblog.biz. And so check all that out. You'll find more resources there on the smallbusinessadvocate.com site than any other small business site in the world. Some things that will help you, multimedia stuff, archives and articles, and on and on. In fact, you can go back and hear Kenneth's interview with me, Kenneth Davis, who's our guest this half hour and the author of Don't Know Much About History. You can go back and listen to this interview later on if you want to, and just check it out when you get a chance. Kenneth, tell us, now you told us a minute ago that truthfully, when the pilgrims wanted to be thankful, they actually fasted and became very reverent and spent a lot of time in prayer, et cetera, et cetera. But we do know that they actually did have a harvest feast.
That's correct.
But it wasn't turkey and stuffing and sweet potato pie and and giblet gravy and stuff like that. It wasn't like that, was it?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't what we sit down to, which is really more of a creation of sort of 19th century America and traditional New England foods that weren't the first foods at the first harvest festival in 1621. What that was actually a colonial era surf and turf. There was some turkey, but it was wild turkey, which is of course a very different thing from the turkey we know and love today.
We'd call it free range turkey, wouldn't we?
Pardon?
We'd call it free range turkey today, wouldn't we?
Well, no, it's even different from wild. Wild turkey is this kind of scrawny bird that you see a lot of them walking around in New England even today, and they're not quite as plump and juicy as those steroid hormonal things that we have in the supermarket. But there was a lot of seafood actually at that first feast: cod, salmon, mussels, eel. I don't know if anybody has the traditional eel today, but that would have been part of the deal because these
and lobster
people,
too, right?
Lobster. Of course, these are people who were living right on the Atlantic coast, and the bounty of the sea was right there. And that's also what really did help keep them alive during that first year, was that they were able to catch enough fish, which, as we know, is very good for you.
Wasn't it incredible? Wasn't it really the height of serendipity for the pilgrims to set up their first landfall base at on the very place where Squanto's village had been wiped out?
It's an extraordinary happenstance, of course, and you can only imagine what these pilgrims, the so-called pilgrims, thought when they're sitting around in a camp. The women and children stay on board the ship. The men build a rough, rude cabin to live in as they try and figure out what they're going to do. And into the middle of the camp walks this tall, half-naked Indian wearing a loincloth, and they don't know what to expect from these.
Now, wait a minute, Ken. It's March 16th in Massachusetts. He's not wearing a loincloth. He's wrapped up. It's still cold in Massachusetts.
Well, he may have he probably had a fur around him, but not much more than a loincloth. Besides that, but then he speaks to them in English. It must have been extraordinary. It must have been in their minds, at least, that God had answered their prayers. But the story of Squanto and how he gets there and how he's speaks English is. Part of the untold miracle of Thanksgiving.
I told that in the first half hour. I've been doing that now for several years. Well, let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. We got about a minute left.
Okay.
What is Kenneth Davis thankful for today?
Well, first and foremost, my family is here. My children are home with me from college, and that's always my first and most heartfelt gratitude goes to them, and just being together. And look, we live in an extraordinary country with extraordinary opportunities, and that's what coming to America has always been about. And we also have to be extremely grateful, no matter how you feel politically about what's happening in America or where we are in the rest of the world, we have to be thankful for the young men and women who are over in Iraq and the rest of the world wearing the uniform.
Thank God there are people like them who are willing to put a cause above themselves. And
it's true, and that's one of the things we have to focus on today.
I agree. Kenneth D. Davis, ladies and gentlemen, don't know much about history, don't know much about mythology, and that whole series of books. Kenneth, thank you for being here. We enjoyed it very much. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. I hope I get to come back another day and talk about
you're already
some more.
You're already invited. Thanks, Kenneth.
Enjoy your holiday.
Thank you. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blastingame. I'll be back on the other side of the news with more Thanksgiving celebration.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blastingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.